Eddie, the Collegiate Senior. Copyright 2019 by Dr. Robert E. Z. Chapter 1. A New Chapter, Part 1. Taking her June buggy to work on the first day of classes, Kathy drives to the elementary school located behind her parents' house, the same school she attended many years ago. Rolling into the parking lot, Kathy parks her June buggy in the very parking place in which she painted a white circle years ago, making a discus pad where she and Eddie practice throwing the discus. The paint is now badly faded and worn away. Anyone passing by would likely not even take notice of the discus pad. Looking out into the field, Kathy sees the small row of bleachers next to the peewee ball field where she and Eddie often stopped when they took the long way home. Not much has changed at the elementary school over the years except for, perhaps, the school's faculty, staff, and the students who attend there. While Kathy walks through the door of the elementary school, Paula is across town, taking attendance in her homeroom class. Paula's homeroom class on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday is an 8th grade gym class of girls. On Tuesday and Thursday, Paula will be teaching health to the same group of girls, and to the boys who are, at the moment, sitting in gym class with Mr. Harris. Seeing Paula's 5 foot, 11 inch, 180 pound physique of solid muscle, many of the girls think gym class is not going to be too easy this year. Perhaps they are right. Only time will tell. At the high school, tensions are high among the administrators. Mr. Shapiro, the interim principal for the last few years, has returned to his position of assistant principal and is not the least bit happy. Assuming the role as principal of Northside High School is Dr. Michael Scott, whom the superintendent of schools, Dr. Noreen Brooks, spent 1 year searching for. Dr. Scott, who was formerly the dean of students at a community college, is the antithesis of Mr. Crum. This is very good news to Mr. Zunday and Barbara, but, for some reason, bothers Mr. Shapiro deeply. While Kathy is beginning her first day teaching, Eddie and Bobby B. are just opening up at the service station. In the office, Eddie sits back in his chair talking with Kurt Richter, the Georgia Tech engineer who modified Kathy's Porsche 914, essentially making it a street-legal racing car. Today, however, the discussion is not about Kathy's Porsche 914. Eddie is discussing with Kurt about putting a Porsche engine in a Volkswagen bus. Taking a lot of notes, Eddie is assured by Kurt that the project is not only doable, but, if done properly, will result in a very high-performance vehicle. Interrupting Eddie's and Bobby B's workday, at the service station is Jimmy O'Brien, who returns to the service station driving his chronically broken down AMC Gremlin. Seeing O'Brien driving up to a service bay, Eddie and Bobby B figure that O'Brien has more than a fill-up on his mind today. Eddie tells Bobby B, "Let's see who gets to help him this time. Rock, paper, scissors. On three. 1, 2, 3. Eddie and Bobby B have continued the tradition that Eddie and Angelo began years ago to decide who gets the pleasure of dealing with a customer who is a pain in the ass. Today, Eddie puts out a rock and Bobby B puts out scissors. Eddie smiles and tells Bobby B, "Good luck, bro. He's all yours." But Bobby B doesn't seem to care in the least. He has come to enjoy messing with Jimmy O'Brien as much as Eddie has. Walking out to greet the customer, Bobby B asks O'Brien, "What's your problem?" O'Brien replies, "I got a flat tire. Can you fix it for me?" Bobby B examines all four tires and tells O'Brien, "Your left front tire is going flat. But the good news is that it's only flat on the bottom." Showing a bit of anger, O'Brien tells Bobby B, "I know that. What are you talking about?" Bobby B advises O'Brien, "Just drive it a few feet, and the flat part will be at the top." Figuring that Bobby B is messing with him, O'Brien exclaims, "What's the matter with you?" Bobby B calmly replies, "Well, you can always have Eddie take a look at it." Realizing that Bobby B is messing with him, O'Brien replies, "Yeah. Get Eddie. Bobby B. tells O'Brien, let me get him for you. Bobby B. walks back into the service area, walks up to Eddie and tells him, O'Brien has a flat tire. Eddie tells Bobby B., send him to the tire shop. We don't have the time to deal with him today. Bobby B. whispers to Eddie, I told him that it's only flat on the bottom. Now realizing there is free entertainment waiting outside, Eddie laughs and tells Bobby B., let's go see what his problem is. Walking up to O'Brien, Eddie asks, what's your problem today? O'Brien replies, my tire is going flat. Seeing the problem, just to annoy O'Brien, Eddie asks, which one? Pointing to the left front tire, O'Brien replies, that one. Eddie asks O'Brien, did you put any air in it? O'Brien replies, yeah. It keeps leaking out. Eddie replies, that would usually be the first sign that something's wrong. Bobby B. points out to Eddie, the other three are okay. 3 out of 4 ain't bad. Eddie replies, yeah. Especially since the left front tire is only flat on the bottom. As Eddie is filling O'Brien's tire with air, Eddie whispers to Bobby B., he's got a nail in the shoulder. The tire can't be repaired. It has to be replaced. Bobby B. asks, whispering, the shoulder. What's that? Eddie replies, the shoulder is where the tread meets the side wall. That part of the tire flexes like crazy, so it can't be repaired. Learning something new, Bobby B. whispers back, got it. A bit on the paranoid side, O'Brien thinks Eddie and Bobby B. are talking about him. Once Eddie has finished filling O'Brien's tire with air, Bobby B. announces to O'Brien, there you go. It's as good as new. You'll probably get about 10 miles before it goes flat again. If you're really lucky, it will go flat on the top next time. Eddie turns around to conceal his laughter, knowing that he has trained Bobby B. well. Seeing that he isn't going to get anywhere, and suspecting that he is being made fun of by Eddie and Bobby B., O'Brien angrily tells Eddie, I'm just going to go to the guy across town. Eddie replies, go ahead. I hope you make it. Your tire needs to be replaced. You may want to try the tire shop down the street. O'Brien exclaims, I'm going to do that. Eddie tells O'Brien, good luck, Junior. O'Brien drives away, but in the direction of the mall where the department store mechanics will be glad to take his money. Later that day, Mr. O'Brien walks into the service station, yelling out, can I get some service here? Eddie walks into the office and asks, can you be helped? Mr. O'Brien replies, slyly asking, why wouldn't you fix Jimmy's tire for him? Expecting a sarcastic response from Mr. O'Brien, Eddie replies, because it can't be fixed. Mr. O'Brien replies, sure it can. What do you think I am, stupid or something? Eddie does not answer, but rather smiles, irritating Mr. O'Brien even more. Mr. O'Brien again asks, so, why didn't you fix Jimmy's tire? Eddie explains, I told you. The tire can't be fixed. It has a nail in the shoulder. Mr. O'Brien exclaims, they fixed it over at the department store. Why couldn't you fix it? Eddie replies, because we don't do shoddy work here. If they repaired his tire at the department store, the repair will last about a week, if he's lucky. Mr. O'Brien sternly informs Eddie, well, Jimmy's tire is just fine now. Eddie smiles and replies, just wait a week. Then, come back and tell me what you think. Mr. O'Brien storms out, leaving with doubt whether Jimmy's tire was fixed correctly at the department store. Eddie, however, knows O'Brien will be driving his AMC Gremlin into another shop in about a week when the repair fails. Later that day, Kathy comes home, where Eddie is waiting for her. Eddie runs up to her, gives her a kiss, and asks, so, how was your first day at work? Kathy replies, awesome. Eddie asks, so, what did you do? Kathy explains, since it was the first day of gym class, no one had their gym clothes. So, I told them what we will be doing this year. Then, I gave them a demonstration with my hoop. And, I did just about everything I know to do with it. You should have seen the kids. Eddie replies, "Wow. I'm sorry I missed that. It sounds like you had fun today." Kathy continues, "I wanted to show them that exercise can be fun. So, then I got the hoops out of the supply room, and they all tried. Some of the girls were pretty good." Eddie replies, "So, I take it you like your job." Kathy replies, "I do." Kathy energetically asks, "So, what are we doing before dinner?" Eddie replies, "Today's Monday, so I guess we're meeting everyone down at the track." Kathy sighs and tells Eddie, "Oh, yeah. That's right. You're still on the track team." Eddie replies, "You don't sound very excited, Katerina. Don't tell me you're going to sit around and watch television every day after work." Kathy suddenly perks up and tells Eddie, "Nope. I'm going. Someone has to keep you guys in shape." Kathy loads the training sled into her car and drives to the track. Eddie, as part of his training, rides his bicycle, trying to beat Kathy to the university. And the winner is Eddie. Blowing through stop signs, breaking the speed limit, and taking a shortcut through campus, Eddie beat Kathy to the track. Eddie and Kathy walk up, seeing Mark, Paula, Karen, Dagmar, and Erica already working out. Mark comments, "I'm so glad that you guys could show up today." Eddie replies, "Some of us have to work for a living, bro." With a witty comeback, Mark replies, asking, "So, what you do, they call that work?" Eddie replies, "So they say." Eddie drops the training sled into the sand. Dagmar, who is very motivated to excel, is the first one to strap herself in. Eddie then takes a warm-up jog down the sand track with Mark. Kathy wastes no time asking Paula, "So, how's middle school?" Paula explains, "I think this is going to be a really great year. Not much has changed over there. And, get this, at least 3/4 of the teachers that we had are still there." Kathy exclaims, "Seriously? Do they remember you?" Paula replies, "Well, no. I'm now Paula Svoboda now, not Giovanni. And I look a lot different from what I did when I was in middle school." Kathy laughs and replies, "You think?" Paula laughs and explains, "Yeah. That was 10 years ago. So, Mr. Harris is the only one who knows my true identity, well, except for the principal. I want to see how long I can keep this going." Kathy asks, "So, how was health class?" Paula replies, "I think I'll survive. The only problem I see is, in one of the classes, there's this girl named Lillian Black. I think she's the Chucky's younger sister." Kathy replies, "You poor girl." Paula asks Kathy, "So, how was your first day?" Kathy explains, "I have 5 gym classes to teach. And when the students are in gym, their teachers have their planning period. So, today, I told them what we are going to do this year, and I got a few good workouts in." Paula exclaims, "You what? How did you get workouts in while you were at work?" Kathy smiles and explains, "I brought my hoop and showed them what can be done with a hoop. They were kind of amazed. And in the supply room, there are hula hoops. So, they all gave it a try. I think they had fun today." Paula gets an idea and replies, "In gym class, on Friday, they are running the mile for time. Guess who's going to be running with them?" Kathy smiles and tells Paula, "See that? You can turn work into a workout." Taking it easy for the day, Kathy and Paula talk about their first day at work while the others take turns on the training sled. After everyone is finished working out, Eddie tells Kathy, "Wow, Katerina. You really worked hard today." Kathy smiles and replies, "Thank you for noticing. I'm hungry. Let's go home and eat." As Eddie loads the training sled into Kathy's car, Kathy tells the group that the plan is to meet up again on Wednesday. With classes at the university starting in about 2 weeks, the afternoon workouts will soon come to an end and the morning workouts with the team will begin. Eddie and Kathy head home, in search of the normal life Kathy is hoping for. After the workout, Mark, Paula, and Erica head over to Bobby B. and Erica's lot where Bobby B. is building his and Erica's house. Arriving at the job site, Mark finds Bobby B. pointing to various trees as the tree removal company is hard at work. Mark walks up and tells Bobby B. it's looking good. Bobby B. smiles and replies, thanks, happy to hear that his supervision of the tree crew has Mark's stamp of approval. Mark then comments, it looks like you're working hard. Bobby B. laughs and replies, I am. The other day, I met the surveyor out here. I made sure he did his job right too. Mark asks, so, do you guys want a pool? Erica takes absolutely no time replying, yeah. One kind of like yours. Mark tells Bobby B., tell them to clear another quarter acre where you want the pool. Bobby B. asks, a quarter acre? Why that much? Mark replies, because all those trees are going to shade your pool. And, besides, you don't want all those leaves falling into the water. Taking control of the situation, Erica tells Mark, I want the pool right off my back patio. And, I want the tiles like the ones at yours and Eddie's pools, not like the concrete at the county pool. Mark mentions, that's travertine tile. Mark jokingly tells Bobby B., she's expensive. Erica is quick to respond, and worth it. Satisfied that everything is going well, Mark and Paula head out, leaving Bobby B. and Erica to supervise the tree removal. 2 weeks later, on the first day of track practice for this academic year, the team meets in the indoor arena at 7 a.m. Mr. Fraser, who is now the highest paid track coach in the nation, walks into the arena. He is joined by his assistant coach, Provost Layton, and the team's events coordinator, Dr. Owens. As he is accustomed to doing, Mr. Fraser silently looks over the athletes sitting on the bleachers as he shuffles a few papers on the lectern. The athletes are also quiet, eager to hear the first words of the season from the now famous coach. The freshmen are particularly interested to hear what Mr. Fraser has to say today. They have heard a lot about him, for he is the sole reason that many of the freshmen have chosen to run at the university. Mr. Fraser begins his address, good morning. I am George Fraser. I am one of the coaches of this university's track team. Standing next to me is Coach Layton, who is the other coach of this team. Standing next to Coach Layton is Dr. Owens, who is a math professor at this university. Perhaps you will be lucky enough to have her for your math classes. Dr. Owens is our events coordinator, which means she compiles and maintains statistics on your performance. Coach Layton and myself will use this information to assign your events. Incidentally, every time you are on the track, your performance is being documented. This year, Kathy and Paula are conspicuously missing from the group. Mr. Fraser begins with some interesting news, stating, for those of you who were part of this team last year, Dr. Bonamo will not be coaching the field events this year. Silence falls over the arena, to the extent that you can hear the proverbial pin drop. Everyone waits to hear Mr. Fraser's explanation of why Dr. Bonamo is no longer on board. Following a short pause, Mr. Fraser continues, Dr. Bonamo has taken a position with another university within the division. While I can't reveal the details of his new arrangement, I can say that I don't blame him for taking the offer. They gave him the deal of a lifetime. Mr. Fraser then raises his voice, exclaiming, if you are a field athlete, your job is to kick his new team's ass, and kick it hard. The athletes cheer, clearly sending the message that they are up for the challenge. Mr. Fraser then announces, taking Dr. Bonamo's place as your field events coach this year will be Dr. Gerhard Zunde, whom some of you may already know. Dr. Zunde walks into the arena, waves, and is warmly greeted by a generous supply of cheering, whistling, and applause. Once the clapping and cheering subside, Mr. Fraser announces, Dr. Zunde has agreed to coach the field athletes for a period of 1 year. In the meantime, the university will be searching for the right individual to occupy the position vacated by Dr. Bonomo on a permanent basis. Dr. Zunde will be working with the university's field athletes in the morning, then head over to Northside High School, where he is still the athletic director and a physical education instructor. Mr. Fraser then begins his introductory address. Now, we're going to get down to business and start with the basics of track. There are only two events that are run in track. Those two races are the 100-meter dash and the 400-meter dash. As Mr. Fraser continues his address, the tribe sits back, as they have heard this message many times and can probably repeat it verbatim. But the new guys on the street have never heard it. Mr. Fraser then explains, the 200-meter dash is nothing more than a prolonged 100-meter dash. The 60-meter dash, which we run during the indoor track season, is nothing more than a short 100-meter dash. The strategy is the same, which is to run as fast as you can. If you can run any one of those races, you can run the others. During Mr. Fraser's presentation, Eddie, pointing toward the other end of the bleachers, whispers to Mark, check out who's back. Seeing who it is, Mark taps Braden's shoulder and points to the athlete whom Eddie was referring to. Braden smiles and whispers to Mark, didn't he get his ass kicked enough last year? He's back for more. Mitchell and Akinmola get wind of who has returned, both at a loss to understand why. The athlete Eddie pointed to is Jeff McCutcheon. Jeff McCutcheon, the youngest of the McCutcheon family, is a walk-on and will be again trying out for a place on the team. Whispering back and forth with McCutcheon is Arnold Asbury, another walk-on, hoping to make the team. And behind McCutcheon is Harry Delaney, who made the team 2 years ago, but failed to make the team last year. Seeing McCutcheon, Delaney, and their new sidekick Asbury, Mark is up for some free entertainment. It's no secret that a few others will be joining Mark in his mischievous endeavors. Bobby B, 4-1, is glad to see that Dr. Zunde will be coaching the field athletes this year. Sitting with Bobby B is Joe Sepulveda who, hearing that Mr. Zunde will be their coach this year, gives Bobby B a high five. Also sitting with Bobby B is Sean Green, a sophomore shot put and hammer thrower. During Mr. Fraser's address, Bobby B whispers to Green, Mr. Zunde is back. This is going to be a really good year. Green, referring to Dr. Zunde, whispers back, do you know that guy? Bobby B replies, yeah. He was my coach in high school. He's really awesome. Glad to hear the news, Green is fired up and ready to impress the new coach. Once Mr. Fraser is finished with his 15-minute introductory address, he announces to the team, if you are a field athlete, please follow Dr. Zunde out to the field area now. Once the field athletes have left, Mr. Fraser announces, unfortunately, today, the rest of us will be staying indoors. As we did last year, we will be running a few time trials. But first, I want the freshmen to meet with Kathy and Paula on the sprinting track. Kathy and Paula will help you to determine your optimal block settings. Eddie yells out, Kathy and Paula are teaching school now. Mr. Fraser laughs and exclaims, that's right. I forgot about that. Kathy and Paula have been working with Mr. Fraser for nearly a decade. They will be sorely missed. Provost Layton steps up, telling Mr. Fraser, I can take care of that. Mr. Fraser continues, okay. Coach Layton will help you determine your optimal block settings. Do not assume the block settings you were using in high school were correct. If history serves correctly, the block settings you were using in high school were probably all wrong. As for everyone else, you will be running a 400-meter dash for time. For the freshmen, you will be running the 400-meter dash once your optimal block settings have been determined. Instructing the team, Mr. Fraser announces, your heat and lane assignments are on this piece of paper. I will leave it on the lectern. Please check the list and be warmed up and ready when your heat is called. Mr. Fraser claps his hands, telling everyone, okay. Let's go. The athletes walk up to the lectern, finding out which heat they are in. Not surprisingly, the first string is in the first heat and will be setting today's high standard. Mr. Fraser announces, the first heat, get behind the blocks. In the first heat are Braden, Eddie, Mark, Hoffer, Hill, John, and, for some strange reason, Jeff McCutcheon and Delaney. Braden points at McCutcheon and exclaims, I'm gonna kick your puny little ass, Junior. Here we go. Let's get this as kicking underway. Braden then points at Delaney and exclaims, and what's your flimsy ass doing here this year? Didn't I kick your ass enough last year? Are you back for some more? The freshmen don't know what to make of Braden. Some of the freshmen have heard that Braden is the world record holder in the 400-meter dash. Others have no clue why Braden is so energetic and vocal. They will soon learn of the interesting dynamics between certain team members. The starter announces, on your marks, quickly followed by, set. The buzzer sounds, and the world record holder in the 400-meter dash takes control of the track. Halfway through the first lap of the two-lap race, Braden takes the lead. Mr. Fraser exclaims, these guys are fast. Everybody, watch this. At 200 meters, Eddie and Mark are head-to-head, chasing down Braden. Halfway through the last lap, as the runners approach the finish line, it is clear that Braden will not be caught. At the finish, Braden crosses first, followed closely by Eddie, then Mark. Hoffer, Hill, and John finish nearly together, with McCutcheon, as expected, coming in last place, barely beaten out by Delaney. Looking up at the electronic timer on the wall, Braden sees his time of 44.21 seconds as he walks off his run. Pointing to the scoreboard, Mr. Fraser exclaims, "Does everybody see that? Look at these times. This is what I expect." Hearing that times in the 44 to 47 second range is what Mr. Fraser expects have the freshmen very worried. And Eddie has Braden a bit worried, finishing 0.2 seconds behind the world record holder in the 400 meter dash. Taking a seat on the bleachers, Eddie whispers to Mark, McCutcheon ran a 54.1 and Delaney ran a 53.8. They must have been working out over the last year. Mark whispers back, replying, shit. They might actually make the team. We need to get rid of them somehow. Eddie tells Mark, with any luck, Mr. Fraser will just cut them. Mark reassures Eddie, one way or another, they are out of here. Still vivid in Eddie's and Mark's memories is how Jeff McCutcheon's brother, Todd, planted steroids in their lockers, attempting to get them thrown off the track team and expelled from school. With the McCutcheon family's history of fixing events, gambling, cheating, and spying on the team, Mr. Fraser will find a way to get rid of Jeff McCutcheon. Mark, of course, will be glad to help in any way he can. Eddie and the tribe sit on the bleachers and talk among themselves as each heat is run. During the conversation, Eddie mentions, here it comes. The girl fight. On the track are Karen, Erica, Tessa, Dagmar, Amanda, Michelle, Leslie, and Allison. Allison King, the lone transfer student from another university, was accepted and offered a full scholarship based upon Kathy's recommendation. All other requests to transfer were administratively denied by a stroke of Provost Layton's pen. Mark comments, I'd hate to be in this race. None of them like to lose. Having worked out with many of the team members over the summer, Eddie predicts, I think Karen is going to win this one. Mark replies, and Erica will be really ticked off. The starter announces, on your marks, followed by, set. The buzzer sounds, and the girl fight begins. Karen, the favorite based upon last year's statistics, takes an early lead. Erica and Tessa will have nothing to do with it, and are right up there with her. At the close of the first lap, today's surprise is Allison, the transfer student, who is in fourth place. On the back straightaway, Karen pulls ahead of her competition, not slowing in the least bit. Into the final curve, Allison unexpectedly passes Tessa, and is working on passing Erica. At the finish line, Karen takes first place. Erica, taking second place, beats out Allison by barely a meter. Tessa, taking fourth place, finishes right behind Allison. Looking up at the scoreboard, Karen, seeing her time of 49.89 seconds, is ecstatic. So is Mr. Fraser, who is screaming like a wild man, "She broke 50 seconds. Did everyone see that? Karen ran 49.89 seconds. Turning to Dr. Owens, Mr. Fraser excitably asks, "What's the record?" If Kathy were around, she would have the world record time in her head. Looking through her folder, Dr. Owens, finally finding the answer, replies, "The world record is 48.60 seconds. Hearing the news, Mr. Fraser exclaims, "Did everyone hear that? These women are fast. And they are fast. All eight women in this heat are faster than McCutcheon and Delaney, suggestive that the two clowns that Eddie and Mark want to get rid of will be cut." Karen walks by the bleachers, receiving a high five from everyone she passes. The eight women take a seat with the tribe, knowing that, in reality, they've all won this race. Any one of them could be expected to take the gold medal in the divisional meet in the 400-meter dash. What this means to the coaching staff is that they have clinched the gold, silver, and bronze medal in the 400-meter dash in the upcoming divisional meet. What this also means is they will win the women's 4x200-meter and the 4x400-meter relay. And, with the times that have just been delivered, winning the gold, silver, and bronze medal in the 200-meter dash is a distinct reality. Next up is the 60-meter dash. While the heats are being run, Provost Layton asks Mr. Fraser, "Are you ready for the meeting tomorrow?" Mr. Fraser sighs and replies, "I am. I'd like to hear what they have to say about me this year." Provost Layton assures Mr. Fraser, "George, don't let them bother you. You've already proven yourself. They are the ones who have to prove themselves now." Mr. Fraser assures Provost Layton, "This year, they are not going to bother me at all." Mr. Fraser mentions to Provost Layton, "I just want to hear what Peter Gregory has to say this year." Provost Layton replies, "He had quite a demeaning tone when he introduced both you and I during last year's meeting." Mr. Fraser laughs, repeating Dr. Gregory's introduction from last year. "This year, we have Mr. George Fraser, who has moved up to our level from teaching gym class at Northside High School, placing great emphasis on the word Mr., as Dr. Gregory did during his introduction of Mr. Fraser." Also imitating Dr. Gregory, Provost Layton repeats her introduction, "And I'd like to introduce Provost Athena Layton. I'm guessing that your university hasn't found a suitable replacement for Dr. Braun yet, Provost." Provost Layton recalls, "Oh, did that ever make me so angry?" Mr. Fraser assures Provost Layton, "This year, we'll have the upper hand in the meeting and on the track. After our performance last year, this year's meeting should be interesting." Provost Layton tells Mr. Fraser, "All of a sudden, George, I'm looking forward to this year's meeting." Mr. Fraser and Provost Layton watch as the timekeepers coordinate the 60-meter dash time trials. As the women begin their heats, Dr. Owens walks over, showing Mr. Fraser and Provost Layton the men's results. Provost Layton comments, "These are quite impressive performances. Many of them have improved tremendously since last year." Mr. Fraser replies, "From what I can see so far, the men have the gold, silver, and bronze medals wrapped up in every race under 400 meters, and the 4x100 meter, the 4x200 meter, and the 4x400 meter relays. The question of the year is who will replace Johnson." Provost Layton observes, "James Hoffer has the fourth best time in the 400 meter. Running Bull, who you put in the second heat as the pacesetter, has the fifth best time." Mr. Fraser replies, "Well, We'll have until January to decide. Dr. Zunde returns with the field athletes and walks over to Mr. Fraser and Provost Layton. Practice comes to a close, and the team hits the locker rooms. Quite pleased with the team's performance this year, Mr. Fraser tells Dr. Zunde and Provost Layton, "I think we've finally accomplished our goal." Perplexed at Mr. Fraser's comment, Provost Layton asks, "What goal is that, George?" Mr. Fraser replies, "We can finally tell them to just put one foot in front of the other faster than the other person." Provost Layton laughs, knowing that it is not quite that simple. The three coaches briefly discuss today's performance, then go about their daily business. The following day, the team meets in the arena, not knowing what is in store for them today. While they are waiting for the coaches to arrive, Eddie asks Mark, "Did you go shopping yesterday?" Mark replies, "Yeah. It's all mixed and ready to go." Mark prepared another special bottle of shampoo for McCutcheon, in which he mixed in a depilatory. Within 2 weeks after using Mark's special mixture, McCutcheon will be totally bald. Eddie tells Mark, "Good. We'll see what we can do to distract him so you can switch it." Braden walks into the arena and heads toward the tribe. Passing by McCutcheon and Delaney, Braden points to them and exclaims, "What's your two asses doing here? What's the matter with you? Didn't you get your ass kicked enough yesterday?" McCutcheon knows better than to respond, for he will lose any verbal match with Braden. The freshmen are beginning to understand that McCutcheon and Delaney are not Braden's favorite characters. All of the freshmen are now keenly aware that Braden is the world record holder in the 400-meter dash, and also part of the 4x400-meter relay team that holds the world record. Braden takes a seat with the tribe, ready for today's ass-kicking session. Mr. Fraser, Provost Layton, and Dr. Zunde walk into the arena, with the team wondering what today's agenda is. Mr. Fraser announces, "Today, we will be running relay drills. The technique we will be using is a non-visual non-verbal exchange with an up-sweep delivery, where the baton never changes hands. Some of you may not be familiar with this technique." For the freshmen, Coach Layton, Erica, Karen, Eddie, and Mark will take you aside and explain the technique to you. You will then join the drill later in today's session. The field athletes will meet with Dr. Zunde again out on the field. If you are proficient in the hammer or shot put, please see Dr. Zunde sometime during this week. Mark interrupts, telling Mr. Fraser, "I'll throw the hammer again this year." Mr. Fraser points at Mark and replies, "You got it." Mr. Fraser now knows the team has the gold, silver, and bronze medal locked up in the hammer throw. Once Mr. Fraser is finished addressing the team, the field athletes head outside with Dr. Zunde. The seasoned runners line up for the relay drill, while Provost Layton takes the freshmen and Allison over to the sprinting track, where they will learn the exchange technique used by the team. On the way to the track, not at all happy with Braden's earlier comments, McCutcheon tells Delaney, "Those guys seriously have to go." Delaney replies, "You ain't getting rid of them, and you know it. They're Teflon. Nothing sticks." McCutcheon whispers back, "Watch me." Hearing McCutcheon's bold comment, Delaney suddenly looks worried. With the athletes gathered on the track, Mr. Fraser announces, "I want the women lined up on the inside of the track. You will be running in lane one. I want the men to line up on the outside of the track. You will be running in lane two." When Coach Layton is finished instructing the freshmen, they will then join us in the drill. During the drill, I will be looking at two things. The first is how well you transfer the baton. The second is if there is any break in cadence of either runner during the transition. Mr. Fraser tosses one baton to Braden and the other to Leslie and announces, "The timekeepers will be timing your every lap. I don't want anyone slacking off. Okay. Let's get moving." The drill gets underway, which is quite an easy one for the seasoned runners. The drill runs smoothly and after a half hour, Mr. Fraser blows his whistle, announcing to the athletes, take a short break. We'll get back on the track in 10 minutes. Provost Layton walks over to Mr. Fraser and informs him the freshmen need some practice, but most of them are ready to give it a try. Mr. Fraser replies, "We'll just throw them into the deep end. They'll catch on soon enough." Provost Layton comments, "Oh, and Allison already knows the technique. She used it in her high school, but the university she previously ran for used a different technique." Mr. Fraser replies, "Kathy was right about Allison. She fits right in. Dang. I really miss Kathy and Paula." After the 10-minute break, Mr. Fraser announces, "We will now be running the drill with four batants. I want the women in lanes 1 and 2, and the men in lanes 3 and 4. Everyone will be waiting on the inside of the track. Part of this drill is to learn not to have a collision on the track." Mr. Fraser then distributes the batants and takes a seat with Provost Layton, observing the athletes' handoff skills and taking notes. On the sidelines, Eddie asks Mark, "How's Bobby B's house coming along?" Mark replies, "He wants a basement, so I'm excavating. And I wouldn't call it Bobby B's house anymore. Erica is making all the decisions." Eddie comments, "Wow. A basement and a pool. That's a lot of excavating." Mark explains, "I'm grading the house and pool a few feet above the average terrain, so the water runs off. They have a lot of hardscape, so by raising the elevation, it will drain better." Eddie tells Mark, "It looks like it's my turn," and gets on the track. Eddie receives the baton from Hill, who has impeccable handoff skills. As Eddie is on the back straightaway, Mark gets on the track to receive the baton. Eddie approaches the transition zone, and the handoff goes smoothly. Eddie leaves the track and takes his place at the end of the line. After Mark's lap, he takes his place at the end of the line with Eddie. Eddie, who was studying the logistics of the drill, quickly points out to Mark, "McCrutchen is on the back straightaway. He's going to be handing off to Braden." Mark replies, "This can't end very good." "It never does." Mark watches carefully as McCrutchen comes out of the curve, approaching the transition zone. Braden takes off at the appropriate time and with the appropriate speed. Much to everyone's surprise, the handoff goes reasonably well until McCrutchen sticks his foot out and intentionally trips Braden. Braden goes down hard, crashing onto the track and tumbling across the lanes. Going down with Braden is McCrutchen, who makes it look like there was a legitimate collision on the track. Mr. Fraser blows his whistle, stopping the drill. Seeing exactly what happened, Mr. Fraser asks Provost Layton, "Did you see that?" Provost Layton shakes her head and replies, "I most certainly did, George." As Braden begins to stand up, Mr. Fraser blows his whistle again and yells out, "McCrutchen. Get over here, now." Eddie and Mark rush over to help Braden, but quickly realize that Braden needs no help. Braden, now standing, lifts McCrutchen off the ground and carries him over to Mr. Fraser. Braden slams McCrutchen to the ground and yells out, "Here's his fat ass." Not wanting to put up with McCrutchen for another season, Mr. Fraser yells out, "McCrutchen. You're cut. Head to the locker room, now." Braden yells out, "You heard him. Get your fat ass to the locker room, now." McCrutchen lies on the ground and is slow to move. Braden yells out, "Since your fat ass ain't moving too fast, let me help you." Braden picks up McCrutchen a second time, throws him over his shoulder, and carries him to the locker room, intentionally slamming him to the ground one more time on the way. A few of the freshmen whisper among themselves, wondering what just happened. Not wanting to miss the action, Eddie, Mark, and a few other tribe members follow Braden as he carries McCrutchen to the locker room. Joining them is Mr. Fraser and Provost Layton. Braden throws McCrutchen into the locker room door, which, unfortunate for McCrutchen, opens outward. Braden opens the door, dragging McCrutchen into the locker room. Braden lifts McCrutchen once again and hurls him into the benches, yelling out, "Clean out your locker and go home, Junior. We ain't got time for people like you." McCutcheon, laying on the floor like a rag doll, yells out to Braden, "I'm going to get you." Braden replies, "Waiting, Junior," a highly sarcastic innuendo invented by the tribe back when they were in high school. Provost Layton walks into the locker room and tells McCutcheon, "Jeff McCutcheon, I expect to see you in my office at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. Am I understood?" McCutcheon replies, "Did you see what he did?" Provost Layton raises her voice, asking again, "Am I understood?" McCutcheon replies, "Yeah." Provost Layton reminds McCutcheon, "10 o'clock, in my office, tomorrow morning. No excuses." On the way back to the track, Mr. Fraser asks Braden, "Are you okay?" Braden replies, "Yeah. That asshole tripped me, just like that goldshit guy did back in high school." Mr. Fraser informs Braden, "I know. I saw it. Coach Layton saw it. And I'm sure a lot of the team members saw it too." Braden asks, "So, you both saw it?" Both Mr. Fraser and Provost Layton assure Braden that they both saw McCutcheon intentionally trip him on the track. Braden informs Mr. Fraser and Provost Layton, "I'm calling the campus police and having McCutcheon arrested." Provost Layton tells Braden, "Go ahead. Be my guest." Taking a detour to the campus emergency telephone, Braden dials the campus police station. Informing the dispatcher what happened on the track, Braden tells her that he wants McCutcheon arrested for assault. The dispatcher tells Braden that Officer Levi is on his way. Braden has learned that, in situations as this, it is much better to be on offense rather than defense. Before the drill resumes, Mr. Fraser has the team assemble on the bleachers. Mr. Fraser tells the team, "I thought I left these problems back at the high school." After a pause, Mr. Fraser raises his voice, exclaiming, "Jeff McCutcheon, the guy who was carried out of here, intentionally tripped another runner on the track. He's been cut from the team and will be placed under arrest for assault. Now, listen to me. If you intentionally trip another runner on the track and get your ass kicked, don't look to me for help. That is your problem. Now, we're going to get back on that track, and I want you to give it your best." The team resumes the drill, except for Braden and McCutcheon. Officer Levi arrives, meeting Braden in the hallway. Braden explains what transpired on the track, explaining that Mr. Fraser and Provost Layton saw exactly what happened. McCutcheon emerges from the locker room and is promptly greeted by Officer Levi, who places him under arrest and reads him his rights. McCutcheon is then cuffed and escorted into the arena, where he is instructed to sit on the bleachers. Part of Braden and Officer Levi's plan is for the rest of the athletes to see McCutcheon in handcuffs. Officer Levi walks over to Mr. Fraser and Provost Layton, getting their statement of what happened on the track between Braden and McCutcheon. Satisfied with what he is hearing, Officer Levi takes McCutcheon away to the campus holding cell until it can be figured out what to do with him. Once McCutcheon is escorted out of the building, Braden rejoins his teammates in the relay drill. After practice, the team heads to the locker room. Mr. Fraser tells Provost Layton, "Well, at least one problem got solved today. McCutcheon is gone." Provost Layton responds, "I'm sure we'll be hearing from Mr. McCutcheon, or his half-witted attorney, Mr. Stupek, at some point in the future." Mr. Fraser laughs and replies, "Then, we'll just put him up against the women again, like we did last year. Since I was going to cut McCutcheon anyway, I might as well get some fun out of doing it." Mr. Fraser then asks, "By the way, do you still have his notepad from last year when he was documenting everyone's times?" Provost Layton replies, "I do." Mr. Fraser suggests, "If they raise their ugly heads again this year, we'll have them explain why McCutcheon was documenting the team's performance. I want to hear what they have to say." Mr. Fraser and Provost Layton head to their offices, only to meet up again in a few minutes when they head out to the annual coaches meeting. Later that morning, Mr. Fraser and Provost Layton attend the annual divisional meeting of track coaches. During the meeting, the topics of discussion are the order of events at the meets, any proposed rule changes, setting the meet dates for the following academic year, and any other issues that may be of concern to the teams in the division. They are joined by Dr. Karakova, who attends the meeting every year. Dr. Karakova is very interested to hear what the committee has to say this year. The first hour of the meeting is rather boring. During one of the coaches' diatribes on the unfairness of certain schools allocating huge amounts of money for track scholarships, Provost Layton mentions to Mr. Fraser, "Right now, they are clearly talking about our university." Mr. Fraser replies, "I'm sure they offer full scholarships too. But no one takes them. It's a hard sell if you have a losing team. And who really wants to be part of a losing team when you can be part of a winning team?" Provost Layton agrees, telling Mr. Fraser, "That's a very good point." Dr. Karakova also mentions, "I totally agree with both of you. Losing is not the goal. Winning is. Iron sharpens iron." On the subject of money allocated for scholarships, Mr. Fraser is addressed and asked by Dr. Peter Gregory, the chairman of the meeting, "Mr. Fraser, would you please share with the committee exactly how many of the track athletes on your university's team are on full scholarship?" Not liking the question in the least bit, Provost Layton, officially speaking for the university, quickly replies for Mr. Fraser, "Unfortunately, sir, Mr. Fraser cannot share that information with you, nor anyone else for that matter. The information you are requesting is highly confidential and will not be revealed under any circumstances." Trying to act diplomatic, yet stumbling over his words, Dr. Gregory contests, "With all due respect, Dr. Layton, admission into the division requires that any team participating must adhere to strict guidelines regarding the university's athletic budget." Provost Layton replies, "I am very well aware of that, sir. Admission to the division entails the university's entire athletic program, not just one specific team. I'm sure you are aware of the yearly consolidated financial statement that is presented by each member of the division to the auditors. I can assure you, sir, the university I represent has passed this year's audit. If you have any questions, please request a copy of our last financial statement, which is in the possession of the auditors. I'm sure they will be glad to clarify any issues that you may have." Realizing Provost Layton has him cornered, Dr. Gregory then asks, "Can you, then, please give us an explanation as to how your university's team manages to have at least a half dozen athletes who are running world-class times? You have to admit that it is quite unusual to have that many athletes of that caliber randomly landing on one team. It simply defies probability." Mr. Fraser smiles and replies, "The last time I checked, we have 22 athletes running world-class times, not a half dozen. And we have the potential to break a few more world records during this year, including one or two in the field events. But to answer your question, the athletes run world-class times because the athletes train hard." Provost Layton, trying not to laugh at Mr. Fraser's intentional evasion of the question, smiles, liking Mr. Fraser's answer. It is clear that no one in the room is satisfied with Mr. Fraser's vague answer. Truth be told, no one in the room likes their teams as getting kicked by the university's team either. And certainly no one in the room likes the fact that the university's team walked away with nearly all the medals in last year's spring divisional meet. Dr. Gregory tells Mr. Fraser in a slightly demeaning tone, "I think we were all expecting a better explanation than the athletes train hard." Dr. Gregory would be correct, as Mr. Fraser's explanation is obvious to the most casual observer. But Mr. Fraser is under no obligation to provide a detailed answer. Knowing the character of Dr. Gregory quite well, Dr. Karakova asks, "May I have the floor, sir?" Dr. Gregory, hoping for a much better answer than the one Mr. Fraser provided, replies, "Very well, sir. Please, go ahead." Dr. Karakova stands up, walks to the front of the room, and explains, "3 years ago, our university was fortunate enough to offer track scholarships to several athletes who attended Northside High School, where Mr. Fraser was their track coach. Today, many athletes on our university's track team originated from that particular high school. Barbara Wingate and Eric Johnson, who went to Northside High School and subsequently ran for our university, are now the coaches at Northside High. Miss Wingate and Mr. Johnson have worked with Mr. Fraser for years and understand his training protocols quite well. At the district's middle school, Mr. Harris, the track coach, begins employing Mr. Fraser's training protocols when the students are in as early as the sixth grade. And Paula Svoboda, who you may know as Paula Giovanni, worked with Mr. Fraser for nearly 10 years. She is now the assistant track coach at the district's middle school. Finally getting some definitive answers of where the talent on the university's team came from, Dr. Gregory is eager to hear more. Dr. Karakova asks Dr. Gregory, "Shall I continue, sir, or does that satisfy your curiosity?" Dr. Gregory, wanting to hear the rest of the story, as are the other coaches, replies, "Please, please continue." Explaining the caliber of the university's coaching staff, Dr. Karakova continues, "Our entering freshmen who have attended Northside High School have undergone 7 years of training using the training protocols of an athlete who was once an alternate to the 100-meter dash in the Olympics. That person is Mr. George Fraser." And also at Northside High School, Dr. Gerhard Zunde, whom I believe most of you have heard of, is the field events coach. I'm sure many of you remember when Dr. Zunde competed in the Olympics. As some of you are aware, Provost Layton is no stranger to track and field herself. And for those of you who may not know, Mr. Harris once held the divisional records in the 100-yard and 220-yard dash right here in our division. His daughter, Michelle, by the way, now runs for our university. Putting the other teams on notice that the university is quite aware of the clandestine operations currently being employed by some of the other teams in the division, Dr. Karakova reveals, "Now, some of the high schools in Northside High's division have even sent spies to study Mr. Fraser's workouts. I cannot think of a better endorsement of the training methods of a competitor than studying their workouts. And our university has evidence that at least one team represented here today has been spying on not only our university's team, but the Northside High School's track team as well. We know who the spies are, and specifically which team here today they represent." Mr. Fraser stares at the Dogpatch University representatives, letting the coach of that university, Dr. Nicholson, know that he has been found out. Going beyond the scope of the original discussion, Dr. Karakova explains, "Now, here's what you don't know. When he was coaching high school, Mr. Fraser met with Mr. Harris at the middle school several times a year. During those meetings, Mr. Fraser shared with Mr. Harris any new training protocols and methods he may have come across. And, from what I hear, Mr. Harris even monitors the lunchroom, making sure the track athletes get proper nutrition. So, many of the athletes on our university's team began their serious training in the sixth grade. And I'm not talking about running a few sprints, then taking a lap or two around the track. I'm talking very serious training here." Citing a recent example, Dr. Karakova explains, "When Edward Boganskaya broke the world record in the 100-meter dash, when Axel Braden broke the world record in the 400-meter dash, and when the 4x400-meter relay team of Edward Boganskaya, Mark Svoboda, Eric Johnson, and Axel Braden broke the world record in that event, they all had 10 years of vigorous world-class training behind them. These guys are not weekend athletes. Track and field is their life. And the great majority of our university's team has trained in this way." Dr. Karakova tells the other coaches, "Let me tell you a story, if I may. I'm sure you've all heard of my daughter, Kathy, who ran for our university. She won the gold medal in the short sprints for 4 years in a row. When Kathy was in high school, she threw the discus during her senior year. She had quite the following of elementary and middle school girls who were enamored seeing a girl win the discus in a high school track meet. The girls came down from the stands after every meet to meet Kathy. One of those girls in Kathy's fan club, as she called it, is now in high school, throwing the discus. From what I understand, she is quite good at it, and will likely go to state this year. Many of you know Dr. Gerhard Zunde. He is her coach. Dr. Karakova then raises his voice, exclaiming, "If that girl chooses to pursue track and field in college, where do you think she will go?" The room is silenced, for everyone present knows the answer. Not wanting the group of coaches to think that all of the university's talent came from one high school, Dr. Karakova relates, "Now, our university has recruited athletes from other high schools as well. A case in point is Karen Coy. 2 years ago, in her freshman year, Karen was what I would call a reasonably good sprinter. She could have gone to any university in the division, and you would have been glad to have her. In the span of 2 years, Karen's performance level went from reasonably good to world class. Scholarship money did not cause her increase in performance. Training did. More specifically, the training program at our university is largely responsible for Karen's dramatic performance improvement." Catching the eye of the university's former field events coach, Dr. Karakova looks over at Dr. Bonamo. Addressing him specifically, Dr. Karakova smiles and announces, "By the way, Dr. Bonamo, the university has hired Dr. Zunde as your replacement. He said to tell you hello. He looks forward to seeing you during the divisional meet." Hearing the news of his replacement, a pleasant look of surprise comes over Dr. Bonamo's face. The other teams have just been put on notice that they will likely not win any field events this year at the divisional meet. They already know that the odds of winning a track event at the divisional meet this year are slim to none. Getting back on track, Dr. Karakova postulates, "Many of the exemplary athletes graduating from Northside High School have been running together for years. If they want to continue running with their former teammates, they would naturally choose to come to our university, since that's where many of their former teammates are now. I can assure every single one of you that the camaraderie among the track team members at Northside High School is unequaled by any other high school in their division. I would venture to guess that none of the athletes graduating from Northside High School would look forward to running against Eddie Boganskaya, Mark Svoboda, or Axel Braden. Now, let me ask you this. Why would they choose to go to your university? What have you done in order to attract the talent that would give you a winning team? And, most important, what do you have to offer them that we don't?" The other coaches are silenced, for they all have no answer to Dr. Karakova's questions. On the subject of research, Dr. Karakova reveals, "In our exercise science lab, for example, we have been researching the effect of intensive interval training and its causative relationship to angiogenesis in muscle tissue undergoing a periodic shift from aerobic to anaerobic metabolism, and back again, and the associated neuroplasticity of the efferent peripheral nerves under such conditions. We've been applying our research to Mr. Frazier's track and field training methods, optimizing training in a way to ameliorate the physical body that is responsible for the superior performance you are complaining about here today. And, I might add, this research makes its way to Ms. Wingate and Mr. Harris, who implements our findings at the high school and middle school level." Many of the coaches look at each other, not understanding a word of what Dr. Karakova just explained. If they had understood, they would realize that the neuroplasticity and angiogenesis to which Dr. Karakova referred takes years to occur. This is exactly why it is important to start training early in life if one wants to be a world-class athlete. Knowing that he is talking way over most of the coaches' heads, Dr. Karakova adds, "I'm sure all of you fully understand and comprehend the significance of what I just said." Dr. Karakova then observes, "Just looking around this room, I see only two other universities that offer a degree in exercise science, and then only at the baccalaureate level. Please be reminded that our university offers degrees at the doctorate level in exercise science and many of its related fields. Our university would be glad to entertain the opportunity to conduct research on your behalf should you obtain an appropriate grant. Dr. Karakova's offer will never be accepted by any other university in the division for the mere fact that Mr. Fraser will have access to the contracted research. Dr. Karakova concludes, "Let me conclude by saying this. A lot of work has gone into building our university's track team, both at the research level and at the training level. Any scholarship money offered to any individual athlete is, quite frankly, Dr. Gregory, none of your business. And, as Provost Layton has already pointed out, our university has successfully passed its audit. But it should be quite evident that research and training, not scholarship money, is the issue at hand." Dr. Karakova walks back to his seat, hoping that his dissertation put the issue to rest. Dr. Gregory thanks Dr. Karakova for his insight and opens the floor to discussion. Truth be told, everything Dr. Karakova said has everyone in the room very worried. Mr. Crumpler, Nacla Brocklin's former coach, angrily exclaims, "I believe we are missing the point. Does anyone really think it's fair that one team totally dominates the division?" A lot of chatter then arises among the coaches. Joining in with the chatter, Provost Layton whispers to Dr. Karakova, "I don't think he heard a word you said, Alexander." Dr. Karakova whispers back, "I don't think Crumpler has heard a word anyone has ever said. That guy can make a moron look like a genius." Some of these coaches and administrators apparently know each other very well. Once order is restored, another coach, Dr. Larry Gable, offers the opinion, "The time often comes in the life of a university when that university has outgrown the level of competition on the sports field offered within the division in which they are a member. This, my friends, is the reason why there are different divisions, to keep the level of competition fair, not allowing one university to dominate any one particular sport. If the current situation is allowed to continue, it will ultimately spell the demise of track and field in our division. So, with that said, does anyone who is sitting here today honestly think that your university stands even a remote chance of winning any event in our upcoming divisional meet in January?" Much chatter and discussion arises, but, this time, the chairman, Dr. Gregory, is able to maintain order. Apparently, the university's dominance in the sport has struck a nerve with the other universities. During the discussion, Provost Layton whispers to Dr. Karakova and Mr. Fraser, Dr. Gable apparently orates very eloquently, however, he is spewing out nothing but intellectual and emotional vomit. Mr. Fraser comments, "He sounds a bit like Dean Grimsby to me." Provost Layton tries to conceal her laughter, but is not very successful, leaving those in the neighboring seats wondering what could possibly be so funny. After several minutes of discussion among the other coaches, Dr. Karakova asks Provost Layton, "Do you want me to put an end to this discussion, or would you like the honor?" Provost Layton replies, "Please, sir. Be my guest." Joining the discussion, Dr. Karakova takes the floor at the next opportunity and explains, "When a university is granted admission to our division, or any other division for that matter, acceptance is based upon three primary criteria. The first criteria, as you probably know, is the total number of students enrolled in that university. The second criteria is the geographical location of that university with respect to others in the division. The third criteria is the university's budget. And yes, I am well aware of the secondary criteria of whether that university has the venues to support those sports in which they participate, and so on. I can assure all of you sitting here today that our university meets all the primary and secondary criteria in every sport we participate. And, I might add, based upon the generally accepted criteria, there is no division more appropriate than the one we are currently in." Silencing the room with facts and sound logic, Dr. Karakova's stance cannot be disputed. Dr. Gregory, although he doesn't like Dr. Karakova's stance, has no choice but to agree. Cornered again by sound reasoning, Dr. Gregory announces, "Unless there is any further discussion on the matter, It's time we move on to the next topic on the agenda. Not letting the subject matter be put to rest, Mr. Crumpler, sounding a bit like an idiot at this point, comments, "What? So you're telling me that there's no other division that seems more appropriate for that university?" Dr. Gregory consults one of the other coaches regarding Mr. Crumpler's question, causing a lot of chatter to arise. During a brief interlude, Provost Layton informs Dr. Gregory, "I can answer that question, if you'd like, sir." Tired of fielding questions on the subject, Dr. Gregory replies, "Please, please, feel free, Dr. Layton." Provost Layton explains, "As Dr. Karakova stated, our university fully meets all the criteria to participate in the division. If our university is removed from the division based upon superior athletic performance, what's to stop anyone from removing Mr. Crumpler's or Dr. Nicholson's university from the division based upon inferior performance? Or, how about your university, Dr. Gable? If I am not mistaken, your team hasn't placed in any event in a divisional meet for 5 years." Provost Layton's statements of fact draw a small degree of hissing, fussing, and laughing, but she neither cares nor is she finished. Drawing a parallel, Provost Layton points out, "I want you to consider this. If the issue at hand were academics versus athletics, would we be having the same debate here today? Of course we wouldn't. What some of you are essentially asking for, in a comparable situation, is that a university's accreditation be revoked because the graduates of that university receive better job offers, or have better acceptance rates into graduate or postgraduate programs than other equally accredited schools. That makes absolutely no sense at all, and neither does what some of you are attempting to do here today. So, unless there is any hard objective evidence indicating that the university that I represent is ineligible to participate in the division, I strongly suggest we move on." Silence follows Provost Layton's comments, prompting Dr. Gregory to announce, "Unless there is any further discussion on the matter, I would like to close this topic and move on to the next item on the agenda." No objection is heard over the rattling of papers being shuffled, so Dr. Gregory announces, "Before we move on to the next item, let's take a well-deserved 15-minute break." During the break, Provost Layton tells Mr. Fraser, "George, you were right. Last year, before our university's Christmas party, you said that they are going to want us removed from the division. I think we clearly saw an attempt to do that here today." Mr. Fraser replies, "It doesn't surprise me. And do you know what they'll be up to next?" Provost Layton asks, "What's that?" Mr. Fraser explains, "Next year, they'll be scrutinizing our academic program, reviewing the athletes' grades, and any other technical issues they can get their hands on." Provost Layton replies, "Well, the good news is that Eddie, Mark, and Bobby B will have graduated. By special arrangement, Eddie, Mark, and Bobby B do not attend formal classes." Dr. Karakova tells Mr. Fraser and Provost Layton, "Consider what just happened in your midterm examination as coaches. You guys aced the test, and the rest of the class failed miserably. Not even a curve would help them. We all see this in the classroom every day." Provost Layton laughs and replies to Dr. Karakova, "Alexander, I really wish you had said that in the meeting." Dr. Karakova replies, "Believe me, I was thinking about it. If that childish brat, Crumpler, had anything else to say, I probably would have." Mr. Fraser comments, "I really wish the team was here to see what is happening at this meeting today." Provost Layton agrees, stating, "I can only imagine how hearing what we heard today would get them fired up." Mr. Fraser says to his co-workers, "And I can only imagine if Braden was here. He'd be telling the other coaches, your problem is that you sit on your fat ass all day long when you're supposed to be coaching your team. And your team falls asleep during practice after you give them a boring pep talk. Then, you get to a meet, and you get your ass kicked and come in last place. And then, you say to yourself, I wonder why we lost. You lost because your team sat on their ass all year long. And when they finally get their ass on the track, their out-of-shape flimsy asses get kicked. Some of your guys run like they've never been on a track before. How do you expect to win if you don't make your team work? Provost Layton and Dr. Karakova laugh, and Provost Layton comments, "That about sums it up." Seeing everyone walking into the meeting room, Dr. Karakova mentions, "It looks like they are ready to get started again. Let's go in." Truth is, Dr. Karakova and Provost Layton were enjoying Mr. Fraser's imitation of Braden, and are sad that it was cut short. The meeting goes on for another 2 hours, when a few things are finally accomplished. One change made is the order of events during the spring meets, primarily to provide for a longer time separation between events that would likely have the same athletes competing in them. The 4x800-meter relay and the 1,500-meter run is one example. The 400-meter dash and 4x400-meter relay is another. During other breaks and after the meeting, not surprisingly, some of the coaches discuss what changes they are going to make in order to beat the university's team. But Dr. Karakova has given them insight of how to solve that problem. Whether they listen or not, as Dr. Zunde would say, would be their problem. The meeting is adjourned, and Provost Layton tells Mr. Fraser and Dr. Karakova to take the rest of the day off.